Olmayacağını bilirim dostya günün cener şöyle kaya. Çok şükür milli tam cehin ötes vay şi gülü veydim. Şi cehi tanınaman o bistam. Stap itam cehin ötüsü vey. Svayam rupa kada mayyam. Tathati sapadantikam. Yesterday we were discussing the ideal reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira as contrasted with the rotten administration of untrained and powerless leaders that we have today. So now we're continuing. The Bhagavatam says that Krishna stayed for some time in Hastinapur just to pacify his relatives. Then he asked the king for permission to depart, and received that permission. And then in feeling separation of Krishna, practically everyone fainted. Subhadra, Draupadi, Kunti, Virat, Viratanaya. That's Uttara. Gandhari, Dhritarashtra, Yuyutsu, Gautam, everyone feeling separation from Krishna. Then it's mentioned that those who have a taste for Krishna Katha can hardly avoid going on hearing and hearing, even if they've only heard once. They become addicted to hearing. So what to speak of those who have the association of the Lord in person, how they feel the separation of the Lord. Then, let's see what happens. Then we come to text 16, which we've been recommended to discuss in our curriculum gang. Prasada Shikara Rudha Guru Narjo Jadrikshaya Parishu Kusumai Krishna Prema Vrida Smitekshana Prasada Shikara Arudha Kuru Narja Jadrikshaya. So the ladies went up to the top of the palace, Kuru Narja, the women of the Kuru dynasty. Arudha, they went up, Prasada Shikara, to the roof of the palace, and Vivrishu Kusumai Krishna, they showered flowers on the Lord, Prema Vrida Smitekshanaha, and glanced at him with shy smiles of love and affection. So, Srila Prabhupada dedicates the greater part of the purport to discussing vrida smiti ikshana, shyness, as a necessary qualification of four ladies. First, he addresses the idea, doubtless coming from some over-intelligent scholars, that this separation of men and women that we still see in India was an introduction by the Muslims. Because we know the Muslims have very strict separation between men and women. So some scholars have suggested that this was not really part of Indian culture, but when the Muslims came in, they brought this with them and it was enforced or adopted in India. And to this Prabhupada says, rubbish. And he offers this verse as evidence that the ladies didn't jump down into the street to be with Krishna and with all the men, but they went up to the tops of the palaces and showered flowers from there and glanced at the Lord with shy smiles. So there was a different behavior from the women. So Prabhupada gives this as evidence that this goes back at least as far as the days of Mahabharata, which means 5,000 years, which means well before Islam was even conceived. So Prabhupada comments that this shyness is a gift of nature to the fair sex, to women. It enhances their beauty and prestige, even if they are of a less important family or less attractive. We have practical experience of this fact. A sweeper woman commanded the respect of many respectable gentlemen simply by manifesting a lady's shyness. Half-naked ladies in the street do not command any respect, but a shy sweeper's wife commands respect from all. I think we talked about this incident last week. So Prabhupada considers this to be both necessary and beneficial for everyone involved. Now, I could talk about this, but maybe I should hear someone else talk about this. Lakshmi Moni hiding around someplace? She said she was going to audit today. No, she's not hanging. She's very articulate on this point because she's had many years of experience in training young ladies in Krishna consciousness, or training Krishna conscious young ladies, or however you want to play with the grammar. So she has, I've heard her speak quite articulately on this point. But would anyone else like to speak on this point? Suppose we say that this is all artificial. It's a batch of sannyasis on a trip who are trying to put women into a box, just trying to restrict them and keep them down, as men have been doing for as long as we can remember. And it's time for us to break out of these antiquated and foolish biases and get real and stop making these distinctions and restrictions. Suppose I were to say that. I don't know, maybe some people would start cheering. Yeah? America, yeah, I could run for office. Compete with the other untrained, unqualified, powerless leaders of state. Would anyone like to oppose this point of view? Okay, we've got two men who are ready to oppose it. We even have a woman. Oh, okay. Okay, we favor women. You're first. But it wasn't natural for you.
It took years. Mm-hmm. But then now, for me to talk to the
you're getting too transcendental and getting confused. What can I say?
So sorry, but I do envy a shy woman. And I see a shy woman and a shy quality and chastity. And I do see, look up to her as, wow, what a good quality.
Thank you. Anyone else want to say anything? Okay, men aren't shy.
They emanate from the breathing of Mahavishnu, and the teachings of the Vedas are absolute. They're meant for all times, all places, all people, and in all circumstances. And it's not that these restrictions are there in the past, and that we can, now it's modern day, and you know, we're beyond them. It's actually, we need these restrictions more now, because as time progresses, people in general become more and more contaminated, and more and more in the body concept of life. So they need to follow these things even more than they used to, not less. And it's a way of life recommended by the Supreme Lord. So who are we to, like, say we know better?
Okay. So it's got authority behind it. Acharya, is this one coming?
Regarding this shyness, it has to be practically given, not just sometimes showing shyness and other times not.
What do you mean by that? How do you know? Thus we've heard from the authorities. As weakness. And people can step on you. Sometimes one has to be a little assertive.
Western culture, and By the way, it's not only difficult for ladies, it's also difficult for men. Not a second time, I know, too many years of experience. To approach people that you do not know, and then have a relationship with them, and then get them to give you know, what's most dear to them away. Their money. In exchange for a book that you don't even really have any interest in. More than an easy task. And it requires a lot of manipulation and sympathy. So we, due to Western conditioning on both men and women, we had these different propensities of not being shy, of going and approaching, you know, having relationships with the opposite sex unrestrictedly. So we engage these things in Krishna's service, even though they're not ideal. And then by utilizing these propensities in Krishna's service, we become purified from the contamination of these propensities. And then hopefully later on in life we can step back and be ideal devotees, not, you know, mixing unrestrictedly with the opposite sex and setting an example, even though we ourselves cannot be bothered by it. But to set an example for the younger people who, as Prabhu was saying, I can also say, because I do know, that they're having a problem with this. This association with the four-year-old thing that's going on, it's in your face. Remember where you look. Mm-hmm. In my face.
Mm-hmm. Something else? Yes.
I think when Prabhupada speak about woman shyness, he speak about the quality of the woman, but to be a preacher, you cannot be shy. Because if you are too much shy, how can you convince, how can you help people to have this kind of knowledge? So we have to know, because Prabhupada said, yes, women have to be shy in one sense, but in another sense, we also cannot be too much shy. Mm.
Yes.
Like the prophet said that when a woman is distributing books, I think she said something like she has to be like a lioness.
Yeah. Yeah. Some book distributors, some ladies, wrote to Srila Prabhupada about this apparent conundrum and said, you know, we're supposed to be shy, but then how do you distribute books? And Prabhupada quoted the saying, a lamb at home and a lion in the chase. Yeah, a lamb at home and a lion in the chase. Yes?
When one feels shy, it's a very uncomfortable feeling. Just what I experienced when I was a child, I was very shy, and I always felt like something was wrong with me. I didn't know what to do with myself, my body, and you know, how to talk. Like, it was not a nice feeling.
To be shy is uncomfortable. Let's look at this just for a minute. And I can go along with that because I was shy when I'm still shy in many ways, but I was really shy when I was a kid, so I understand how it can be problematic. We've talked a bit about restrictions and the idea that association of men and women should be curtailed, restricted, and so on. Which is certainly true. And Prabhupada talks about that further on in the purport. But the first thing he seems to be saying is that it's a natural quality. That it's a natural quality. Even of among men, to be modest is a virtue. And certainly among women, it's counted, at least in Vedic culture, as a virtue. So Prabhupada's saying essentially that shyness is natural. And part of what I would perceive as the problem that we're, that modern social expectations are such, modern social mores are such, that it's considered unnatural. It's like a problem. You know, this girl is so shy, you know. I mean, she sees boys and she runs the other way. She doesn't know how to start a conversation with anyone. She doesn't know how to make friends with boys. She's so timid, and so on and so on and so on. How will she be, you know? And then she feels that she's unpopular because she doesn't have a lot of friends, and so on. And so maybe a psychologist has to be consulted, or some guidance person from the school to help her get over it, because she's really sort of doesn't know what to do about this, how to overcome this obstacle, this problem, which so many of the other girls don't seem to have, but she has this problem that she's just so timid. So it's like something to get over. Whereas if we take the view that it's natural and that it's even good, then it's not something to be gotten over, it's something to be cultivated. There are a lot of things like that happen in school. Like in school, in the teens, a kid may start to have what's called an identity crisis. He starts to ask himself, you know, like, well, who am I anyway, and what am I doing here, and what's the purpose of my life, and, you know, why am I here, and why am I doing this, and gets in all sorts of anxiety, and gets obsessed with these questions, so that he needs psychological help to get over it, so he can just get on with his life, work like an ass, put these questions aside, and have a normal life. The questions are seen just as some sort of interruption in the flow of normal human development. And so it is with shyness also, that it's seen as something for the poor girl to get over. And maybe she needs some help, she needs some guidance, she needs to, I don't know, maybe she needs a boyfriend or whatever it is, just to get her out of her shell. You know, poor girl's in her shell, and she doesn't know how to. And she feels uncomfortable at parties, and she and Prabhupada's argument would be that it's natural, that the parties are artificial, that these social events where they throw boys and girls together and mix them and dance them up and all this other kind of stuff is unnatural. And that people feel awkward in these situations because it is awkward, because it's uncomfortable, because it's foreign to the better qualities of a human being. So his argument would be that it's not something to get over, it's something to cultivate or to appreciate. And that it's a natural quality, as Prabhupada said, it's a gift from God. What does he say? God's gift to the fair sex, is that his language? That it's something good. In other cultures, this is appreciated. In India, still, it's appreciated. In, of course, the Islamic world, it's appreciated. In Spanish culture, very much appreciated, right? If a girl is casta, if she's chaste, if she's shy, then she's high class. And if she doesn't have those qualities, then she's sort of on the bottom, the lower levels of society. Right? In the Latin American countries, I think. It's getting, you know, the values of other countries are coming in. But still in Spanish culture, in Italian culture, and in the cultures of many traditional cultures, many traditional cultures, these values are still appreciated. If even if they're on their way out, they're still appreciated. Or they're appreciated in a girl you'd like to marry. They're not appreciated in girls in general, but in a girl that you'd like to marry, yes. I'm speaking from a little article I saw in New York Times about some student movements that have been... Actually, there's a movement on some of the Ivy League, the higher class, upper level universities among the especially women students for chastity. And oddly enough, these movements are inspired, of course, in part by Christian traditional values, but a large part of what is motivating this is feminism. Because the women are saying, you know, damned if I'm your sex object. You know, I'm not your sense gratification machine. Who do you think I am? And so with a feminist agenda, they're saying, you know, forget it. I'm not just for having sex with any undergraduate who comes along and you know, feels in need.
What if I want to be shy?
Yeah, exactly. And there was a counter movement from some other group of people or for some other students, and the spokesman for the other side was kind of this brassy, loud, you know, tell it like it is, any kind of language kind of girl who sort of prided herself on being ready for anything. And this was a comment from an undergraduate, sort of judging between the two, who said that, you know, this is the kind of girl I'd like to be with, but it's not the kind of girl I'd like to marry. There is a noted distinction. I could say more about that whole side of things, but anyway. I suppose we'd summarize it by saying that men have respect for women who are reserved. They like women who are loose, but they respect women who are reserved. Big difference between being liked and being respected. Yes. I would change the language of that a little bit. It's the Bhagavatam showing us the highest standard of life, which we may or may not be able to live up to. No, Bhagavatam is showing us the normal standard of human life. No. These are, of course, the ladies of Hastinapur, they're Damvasis, so they're all personal associates of Krishna. But the normal village lady in India follows these sort of standards. You know, not the Paramhansa, Tapasvi, one in a million kind of great soul going back to Godhead in this lifetime ladies. The ordinary women in the villages have this, right? The Prabhupada gave these, sweeper woman. That's not even a culture, anything. That's not your highest perfection of life. That's a lady who, you know, sweeps. She's sweeping. So Prabhupada said that's, you know, it's not the highest perfection of culture. It's ordinary culture, or normal culture. And we're so far from normal culture. As we were yesterday, you know, what is a king? Well, a king is this, this, this. And what do we have now? They're not even human beings. You know, okay, Maharaj Yudhisthira was a super, ultra-perfect king. But even a normal king you don't see these days. Even a decent king, what to speak of a really good king. So it is with culture, that people are so misled by the environment of Kali Yuga that they... I'll give you an example. One of my godbrothers and godsisters, when I first joined at 26 Second Avenue, so there were two young devotees, one brahmachari, he must have been about 18 or 20, and a young girl who was still in high school, so she was probably about 16, 17. And the brahmachari was interested in getting married, and anyway, it got matched up a little bit, and Prabhupada approved. And the obstacle was the girl's mother, because the girl's mother said that she's too young to get married. She should get to some experience and get to know different boys, and then she could see about marriage. So Prabhupada said, just see, the mother wants the daughter to become a prostitute. Anyway, the marriage went through, and they're still married, and they have a nice daughter, and everything's good. You know Madhusudan. Hmm? Yeah, he taught me everything. Got me straightened out. So this is the problem, that in the modern culture, you know, even the mothers, the fathers, they don't have the sense of what's actually cultured has degraded. So that the mother thinks, well, you know, what's the problem? My daughter's unpopular. And, you know, every man knows what popular means. But it's a problem if my daughter's unpopular. So the parents encourage that they should be forward and assertive and mix freely and so on. So that if a person's normal, it feels weird. If a girl has the normal feminine qualities, then that's something that we have to talk her out of. So Prabhupada's take on it is that these are normal qualities. Even at the, you know, we talk about sort of general normal culture, but if a girl goes to one of the really upper crust finishing schools and so on, they're taught how to be reserved. They're taught how to be reserved. And Prabhupada says that this commands respect. I passed through the Gulf countries every year a couple of times, and you see the Muslim ladies there, and you know, for all the propaganda in the West about how they're beaten and mistreated and everything, they have such dignity. You know, they're covered, and they're always, there's maybe a couple of ladies and for their children and so on, but it's never like, hi Jack, how you doing? I was at an airport one time, and early morning flight, 6 o'clock. So one of the check-in ladies came on to work and hugged her colleagues. Hi, Jack. How's it going? No, that's just good morning. How are you? Gave him a big hug. That's just like normal. You know. And if you said anything, you'd be like one of those ayatollahs who comes and stones people. If you were to suggest that there was anything odd even about it, what's with you? But this is an unnatural sort of culture. By contrast, in the Middle East now, a lot of tourists are coming. And you see these women, I don't know where they think they are. You know, maybe in a James Bond movie or something. And they're just so brassy and you know, the packaging is either shrink-wrapped or see-through or the combination of both, and they just look like, you know, the only question you'd ask them is, you know, how much do you cost? And the Muslim ladies, by contrast, have great dignity. Great dignity. So Prabhupada is, you know, in the West, is, of course, wants to propagandize, you know, therefore it's unfortunate. America wants to stamp the world with its own so-called cultural values, which are really like obliteration of culture and institutionalization of a degraded way of life. And the whole world is eager to have that. You know, why should we dress in traditional clothing when we could dress in jeans and you know, jeans and t-shirts?
Designer.
Of course, designer jeans. You know, why should anything be slightly covered up when it could be marketed? So it's unfortunate. And at the same time, we have a feminist movement that complains about how women are objectivized and they're them being seen simply as objects rather than as people, and they're, you know, so on and so on and so on, simply seen as tools for men's enjoyment and so on. But at the same time, the same women don't have the cultural assets to draw upon to promote a way of life that would be different. In other words, from one angle of vision, Indian cultural values or Vedic cultural values represent an advanced stage of the achievement of the values of feminism. Because it's meant to protect women from being exploited and objectivized and turned into mere machines for the gratification of lusty men. It's meant for preserving for them a status of dignity, a status of sanctity, even, that the Western culture just doesn't recognize or sees as something to be stamped out. Comment, yes. Well, you know, whatever we are, we make the most of it. We're not going to go back and rewire our childhood, rewire our youth, rewire everything and be something that we really can't be. That's not possible. And therefore, we have to adjust. Therefore, Prabhupada gave, he said, for example, that in the West, in the India, you'd never have women living in temples, but he had women living in temples, because it's a different atmosphere, you have to adjust. There's so many things that would be different in India, and in and which Indians, you know, seeing the Western thing, would criticize. But Prabhupada said, they don't know. There's a different atmosphere, so we have to adjust. Sankirtan is probably a good example. The Prabhupada saw that there's all this energy here, and just artificially trying to make people into Adarsh Hindustani Nadis, ideal Indian women, it would not be possible. So make them ideal devotee women and distribute books and in that way spread Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada was practical, he was realistic, he was not artificial, but he's giving these important ideas of values. First thing is to see that it's a value. You know, in other words, if you don't even see it's a value, you know, you're not shy. Shy? You know, where are these guys coming from? Or, you know, from men. Self-restrained? Celibate?
What does it mean?
Yeah, either what does it mean or, you know, I mean, don't they understand what it does to a person? They're going to have all screwed up men. You know, they don't get it. The world thinks it's something weird, something, you know. They don't eat meat. You know, don't they know about protein? So the world has all these strange ideas about how, you know, being a lusty man and a loose woman and a meat eater, you know, and socially free and loosening yourself up a little bit with a responsible drinking. Yeah, this is... The world has these very weird values in Kali Yuga. So the first thing is to recognize what the real values are, what spiritual values or high cultural values are. And then we say, okay, you know, here's what I can do, here's the note I can hear, here's where I am, and here's where I could go to, and maybe here's where I could go to after that, who knows. But first thing is just to recognize what's cultured and what's not cultured. To recognize that. Even maybe with some introspection to see, well, gee, that, you know, I kind of had that, but it got burnt out of me or whatever. Or maybe I didn't have that. Or anyway, it would be nice to have. At least that's the first thing. It would be nice if I could be like that. You know, it would be nice if I could be brave. It would be nice if I could be shy. It would be nice if I could be thoughtful. It would be nice. That's the first thing, to see the value. Then the next thing is cultivation. And we make thousands of choices. Throughout the day, we make so many choices. Great and small. Like, hi, where are you from? You know, we see a new girl on the block, and it's like, hi, where are you from? Okay, well, what's wrong with that? That's just normal. We're being friendly, but there's a choice there. And you see sometimes, I was here last year, in the evenings I sometimes walk around the samadhi, and so I'm walking around the samadhi, and there's like three or four guys, and there's a girl, a teenager devotee gang, and they're talking. And, you know, it's just talk. But the subtext of the talk, or the real subject matter of the talk, is pretty obvious. You're a girl, we're guys, and it's nice talking to you. From both sides. And then, you know, what does it take, about a round, two rounds to go around the samadhi? Lap two. Still going on. Lap three, still going on. So that's a choice you have. You can say, well, hey, new girl on the block, wonder where she's from. Or you can say to yourself, whoa, new girl on the block, none of my business. It's a choice. Or, you know, when he says hi, it's like, hi, Prabhu. Or it's, hi, where are you from? You know, there are choices. It's like, you know, there are ways to signal that, okay, it's been 2 minutes, I've been polite, and time for us to move on. And there's time for, well, you know, Swami's doing his fourth lap. Well, that's nothing. It's only been half an hour, and there's so many things to talk about. So it's a question of culture. It's something of an issue here in Mayapur because the Bengali devotees grow up with certain cultural values, and the Western devotees grow up with different cultural values. And sometimes the two come in conflict, and it creates some tension, where the essentially Bengali devotees are not very enthusiastic about the Western way of doing things or Western values. And the Western devotees, on the other hand, are not enthusiastic about sort of uptight Bengali guys who don't understand the difficulties that people have and the sort of cultural upbringing that you have to deal with if you grew up in the West. So it creates some tension sometimes, right, Acharya? These things are, it's one of the ongoing issues in Sridhar Mayapur to be negotiated or dealt with or for people to come to a common understanding about. But anyway, again, these are, first of all, Prabhupada says it's a natural quality that women have. And then the next thing is that it's something of cultural value. That is, your culture can do two things. It can either reinforce that tendency, or it can do something about it, try to help people overcome that tendency. And the modern culture tries to help women overcome that tendency for shyness, or just sort of knock it out as even in the realm of consideration. And the Vedic culture reinforces it and says, yeah, it's good, you know, you be over there and they'll be over there. And there's a natural attraction, that's also natural. Shyness is natural and attraction is also natural. And then there's a context within which that attraction is given some scope. But if it's Prabhupada's point is that that scope for that should be limited. And Prabhupada explains it. He says that basically the body is an illusory presentation. It's earth, water, fire, air. Well, the ether we don't even see, but earth, water, fire, air. You put it together in a certain combination, and she's, you know, knock dead gorgeous. Drop dead gorgeous, drop dead gorgeous, you know. My God, did you see that earth, water, fire, air? all that stuff. So Prabhupada says it's beautiful because the living spark is there, but the illusory energy is so strong that no one thinks about the living spark, they're just thinking about the other stuff. So this attraction is there, and Prabhupada says it's the attraction of Maya. The attraction to the outward material covering instead of the actual substance. The Vedic wisdom, therefore, forbids us to be attracted by false beauty. But because we are now in the darkness of ignorance, the Vedic civilization allows very restricted mixing of woman and man. They say that the woman is considered to be the fire, and the man is considered to be the butter. The butter must melt in association with fire, and therefore they may be brought together only when it is necessary. And shyness is a check to the unrestricted mixing. It is nature's gift, and it must be utilized. The world will be better, essentially, probably say. The world will be better, people will be happier, women will have a happier life, men will have a happier life, everyone will make better spiritual progress if this quality is encouraged. And here we see it in the women of Hastinapur. They just naturally moved up to the roof. They got their darshan, but they had their own place for that. They got up onto the roofs. They were showering flowers on the Lord. So they kept their dignity and their shyness, and they got their darshan of Krishna. So that Prabhupada is appreciating that and encouraging that. Anything else? Yes. Yeah.
We're brought up in the
different world.
Different world, and they become the Krishna consciousness after, basically your character has been embedded with, these undesirable qualities of, freely mixing with the opposite sex, For me, it was a little difficult because I had this, going through school, I had this skinny, body. I thought you had to be some kind of a sports star, Arnold Schwarzenegger type guy to be popular with the girls, so to speak.
And the girls have to be cheerleaders.
Yeah, the girls have
to be baton twirlers.
Yeah. So
and beauty queens.
When I went out on Sankirtan, I came to a rude awakening that actually this isn't the case. By my own personal experience, because I approached men and women. Of course, I was attracted to women, so I would probably attract women, approach women more than I would approach men, and I was able to get donations and sell more books to women and men because of the attraction, the domination. And I learned that, hey, it's not, you don't have to be macho, you just have to kind of be a suave kind of guy that knows how to talk, and even above that is if you can make some money. All of a sudden I found out myself to become a commodity, so to speak, at the temple amongst the unmarried girl being the biggest collector, And now I see it as time has passed and I'm no longer that commodity that I used to be. Not only married and have a kid, but I'm old and wrinkled and this and that, that devotional service is there, and in a contaminated space, you perform devotional service, and then gradually the good qualities will come upon you in due course of time, and you just have to be patient and worship Krishna, going through the whole game of attraction and expulsion.
This, we sort of talked about the disadvantages of the culture that Western people grow up in. On the other side, if you look at where devotees are in terms of the Krishna consciousness movement compared to the rest of the world, Prabhupada was very proud of his devotees. The behavior of the devotees is, we're not satisfied. We want it to be better. But in terms of just a sort of normal comparison, our people are great. Even our kids, I travel with our teenagers sometimes. And by modern community standards, they're very reserved. As loose as they are, you put them next to the people out there, and they're quite advanced. And these are the people who are not really practicing; they just grew up in devotee families. And what to speak of those who are actually practicing and serious, whether younger generation or older generation, it's really quite admirable how they've taken on the values of spiritual culture, devotional culture, and the the larger culture that, that fosters it. So it's really quite, quite admirable. And even we find that, paradoxically enough, or sadly enough even, that our modern Western girls, when they're devotees, make the modern Indian girls sometimes look like real floozies, like real loose, you know, loose cases. Because unfortunately in India, these Western values are being pushed, and oh my God, you know, it's just Bombay sometimes, and television and videos and the whole thing. So that, again, now Indian women are being encouraged to, you know, throw off their shackles and become belly dancers. I was just going to say prostitutes, but okay, belly dancers or whatever it is, become cheap. So it's another example of Prabhupada's movement, where if they look to the West, they'll see that in the West, the Western girls and the Western men are taking up the values that they're tossing aside.
Two things. I have spent many years in the U.S., and every time young girls come from India to the U.S., it is so refreshing because they are so sweet, they are shy, they are, I mean, so many good qualities versus the girls, you know, who are, who have been born there and grown up there, you know, even when they are Indian, you know. These Indian girls who are born and raised there, as they finish university and start working, they take on all these characteristics, you know, in order to compete in the workforce, you know, and they lose out so much, you know. And one personal thing is that having spent so many years in the U.S. and hardly having any relatives and struggling in various ways, I have kind of appreciated, because I had to move quite a bit within U.S., that every temple that I would go to, I would be given so much more dignity and respect, which has, you know, and then I would find that those devotees are advanced devotees. And I say, wow, they are giving me so much mercy. Look how kind they are being to me, you know. And when I look back, especially during my difficult times, because I had to go through divorce, those are the things that kept me going. And those temples were, would be my home away from home. You know? And it goes to show that Krishna consciousness, how good it is for men and women, because, you know, I found that they were more gentlemanly. You know? I'm very, very grateful for that.
Thank you very much. Yes.
This quality of shyness, is due to a bodily concept or is it transcendental?
Is shyness due to the bodily concept or?
Transcendental
consciousness?
Quality.
Equality? No, it's due to, it's a feature of embodied life. That is to say, that men will, genetically and so on, they'll take on certain characteristics, physically and psychologically. Women will take on other psychological and physical characteristics. So what Prabhupada's saying essentially is that it's natural. Natural means material nature. Just like Draupadi, we were reading in a previous chapter, let him go, he's a Brahmin. Why? Because she was a woman. Women are more emotional, women are more little sentimental, women, you know, have a different nature. And Bhima, it's like, you know, kill a son of a Brahmin. You know, so it's, there's a different nature there. If a, if a man is kind of shy and timid, it's like, what's with him? You know, is he... you know, maybe something else, or you know, what's going on. But if a woman is shy and sort of reserved, then she's like high class or cultured or sweet or innocent or however people might think of it, or even hard to get. You know, for the lusty guy, she's, you know, hard to get. You know, something's wrong with her, you know, you just can't get to her. Well, that's good. Oriental culture is like this, isn't it? In the Oriental culture, countries, it's the traditional values are similar, right? It's reserved. You don't find, you know, ladies going to the beach with 10% of their bodies covered, and it's just not dreamed of in the traditional culture. But in the modern culture, you know, well, whatever we saw in the James Bond movie, that's what we emulate. So yeah, it's not transcendental. Transcendental on the transcendental platform, we have nothing to do with this body. Sukadeva Goswami was completely on the transcendental platform. Didn't see a difference. Women were bathing naked in the pool there. He looked at them the way a kid looks at naked women. Yeah, you see all the time that women bring their little boys into the ladies' room with them, and nobody thinks twice about it because they're little boys. They don't see any distinction. The Prabhupada quoted Saraswati. One of the little girls asked her father, "When you were young, were you a boy or a girl?" So Sukadeva Goswami was completely on that platform. He didn't see a difference. And the women, you know, they could see by his face that he didn't see a difference, so they didn't even bother about it. But when his father came by, they covered themselves because they could understand that, well, he's a householder, he has to see a difference. So it's not on the highest transcendental platform, but it's on the platform of normal spiritual function, because we're not purely spiritual beings in our present embodiment, or we are purely spiritual beings in our present embodiment. So we have to take account of both, that we're pure spirit, just like eating. You know, is eating completely transcendental? No, it has to do with, we have to maintain our bodies. But if we don't, we'll die. And we spiritualize the process. We don't eat certain things, and we eat everything that's offered to Krishna, and we eat within limits of what we can handle, and so on. So these sort of things relate to that. How does an embodied spirit soul live? Is that okay?
So for those who are in the human body,
mm-hmm.
Mm. Then this quality of shyness naturally will be disappearing.
Excuse me? Will it disappear?
Yeah.
No?
No,
it remains. Or it's engaged. Or it's... it's natural. Again, it's not seen as, well, this is... Let's see what else. Let me think of something, for example. Like for a man, we might say that a quality of a man is to be protective. Well, when he becomes transcendental, does that disappear? You know, that he when he's still on the mundane platform, he feels protective toward his wife. But when he's transcendental, he drops that. You know, you could flirt with her, you could do whatever, you can have a date with her, you would do whatever you want, because he's transcendental. No. He knows that it's my responsibility, I'm the husband, I have to do this, this, and this, and this. But I do it for Krishna. I do it for Krishna. That this is, you know, from one, he knows that actually what do I have to do with being a man, being a protector, being, you know, this is all rubbish. But it's my duty, and let me do that for Krishna. I have to act in a certain way. The king has to act like the king. Queen has to act like the queen. The older brother has to act like the older brother. The younger brother has to act like the younger brother. Everyone has some duty to perform. The Brahmin has to act like a Brahmin. Kshatriya has to act. On the spiritual platform, what do we have to do with Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra? What do we have to do with Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha? This is all in terms of the body. But this is all favorable for Krishna. Because now that when you become spiritual, you say, what is this Brahmin stuff? Why do I have to take 3 baths a day? Why do I have to chant these mantras? Why do I have to... What is this Kshatriya stuff? Why do I have to shoot arrows and kill people and do all those terrible things? What is all this Vaishya stuff? Why do I have to sell things and buy things and come to a shop every day? What is this Sudra thing? Why do I have to help people in what they're doing? No, when you're on the transcendental platform, yes, I'm not Brahmin, I'm not Shudra, I'm not any of these things. I'm servant of the servant of the servant of... But I continue my duties for Krishna's service. I act according to my nature for Krishna's service. So, on the spiritual platform, no difference between anyone and anyone and anyone, and even between human beings and animals or birds or fish, trees. But these cultural features are favorable for spiritual development. And it's not that we develop spiritually and then we throw away the culture. You know, it's like a ladder where you get up to the top and you throw the ladder away because you don't need it anymore. No, even in the advanced stages, these characteristics remain. But they're in the service of Krishna. They're in the service of Krishna. Is that okay? Okay. I'm just thinking about whether we should take a break. Well, taking a break implies that after the break you come back. Well, I was going to switch topics. You want to put a final comment in before we switch topics and take our break? A final question? Uh-oh. Okay.
Seeing a man, and then they won't be able to be chased to any man. And then after reading this, I have a daughter, so she's 10. I thought I better start talking to other parents about this. And I was quite surprised to notice that early marriage was definitely not on for any of his parents. There's no question about it. One reason that was given is, well, who are you going to marry them to, and how are you going to know that it's going to hold by the time they are, you know, 5 years down the road, when these boys are going to be back? So there was no question about it. Then the question is, how are we going to develop culture if we're with this attitude?
Yeah, there's a big question there. You could explore that particular topic about early marriage. It's totally like, early marriage. And yet... exactly what Prabhupada is talking about becomes a problem for the young people, that they reach a certain age and they're basically jumping out of their skins. Naturally. Sex desire becomes strong and they're not married. And then what do you do? So that problem is not avoided by saying, well, you know, early marriage, that was for, you know, something that, you know, let's be practical. But then the other questions are there too. You can't just say, well, early marriage, so let's just find anything and get the girl married, because then you have other sorts of problems. The biggest problem I've seen, and this is just a I'll just leave you with this. It's just a practical observation, and then we can break. The biggest problem I've seen is that we mix boys and girls. We're interested in getting the boys and girls married, and we want to find opportunities to get the boys and girls married, and so we find, you know, proper venues or proper arrangements where they can have some limited association, and it's boys and girls of the same age, and that's the pits. And they're totally, and the girls themselves and the boys themselves are totally naive about it, and half the time the parents are at least half as naive. They put the boys and girls together, and they're totally unsuited for one another, because a 16-year-old girl is a woman, and a 16-year-old boy is a kid. So you really want to look for, you know, 16-year-old girls and 25-year-old boys, because by then, at that age, a boy is thinking, you know, well, what am I going to do with my life? And I should get serious. And, you know, he's completed his education. He's into a career, and he's making money, and he's thinking about, you know, well, you know, I got a job, I got money, I got a career, but where's my wife? Last thing a 16-year-old boy is thinking about is a wife. A sexual opportunity, yes. A wife, no. But you get 16-year-old girls, and they're thinking about husbands, they're thinking about children, they're thinking about families. And so you put the two together, you know, six little girls who are thinking about husbands and families, and little boys who are thinking about scoring. And, you know, you've got the wrong idea. So these things need to be worked out with all of the particulars. It's not just like farm. You know, we should have farm communities. Yeah, but you have to think about how you're going to do a farm community with all the things that it entails. So marriage is the same way. You have to think about compatibility. You have to think about age. You have to think about all the things you have to think about. But the Vedic ideal is good. That's the first point. We will stop. And we'll see you in 10 minutes. Yes? 5:30?
Panchadashodhyaya, Sri Bhagavan Vacha. Urdhvamula matashakam ashvatam prahuravyayam chandansi yasya parnani yastam veda sadeda vid adhashchordvam prasritas tasya shaka guna pravidha vishaya prabala adhashchamulan yanusantatani brahmanubantini manushaloke Rupamasyeha tato palabhyate Nanto natradir natrasam pratishta Ashvatthamenam subhibhudhamulam Asanga shastrena jidhena chitva Tathapadam tat parimargatavyam Yasmin gatana nivratanti puya Tameva chajyam purusham prapadye Yitapravritti prasurta purani Nirmana moha jita sangha dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritta kama dvandvaya vimukta sukha dukkha sangar yashchad chimudha padam avyayam tat na tad bhasayate suryo na shashanko na pavakaha yad gatva na nivartante tad dhamma padamam mama mamaivamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha Manashashtan Indriyani Prakritisthani Karshati Shaviram Yadavapnoti Yachchapyut Kramati Sharaha Guhitvaitani Sanyati Vayurgandhani Vashayat Shotram Chakshus Parshanam Cha Rasanam Khanam Evacha Adhishtaya Manaschayam Vishayanupasevate Udgramantam Stitam Vapi Punjanam Bhagunan Punantitam vimudha nanu pashanti pashanti jnana chakshushaha yatanto yoginas chainam pashyantyatman yurastitam yatanto prakritatmano nainam pashyanti chetasaha yadadit chakatam tejo jagatpasayate kinam yachchandramasi yachchadno tat tejo vidhi mamakam kama vishya chabhutani dharayam yaham ojasa pushnami chaushati sarva somo bhutva dasatmakaha aham vaishpanado bhutva praninam dehamashvataha pranapana samayukta pachamyannam chaturvidham sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matasmitir jnanam apohanam sa vetaischa sarvairaham eva vedyo vedantakrit veda vedeva chaham vadhimau purushau loke kshadas chakshara eva cha kshadak sarvani bhutani kutastho kshara uchate uttama purushastvanya padamatmetkirtharataha yo loka trayamavishya vibhartya vyaya ishadaha yasmat kshadamatitoham akshadara pichottamaha atosmi loke vedecha pratita purushottamaha yomamevam asammudho janati purushottamam sasarvavid bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata iti guhyatamam shastram idam muktam mayanaka etad buddha buddhiman syat kritakrityascha bharata om tat sadati srimad bhagavad gita supanishatsu nama vidyayam yoga shastre shri krishnarjuna sambhade purushottam yoga nama purushottama yoga nama panchadashodhyayaha
I was going to make one comment because it's such a hot topic. Everyone wanted to say that Prabhupada said that it won't be our children, but our children's children. Remember that one?
I've heard that. I don't know. Did he say it?
I don't know. I was at one of those.
It's a prominent Prabhupada said.
Yeah.
I don't know if he ever actually said it, but
that it's not easy to like imbibe the Vedic yeah. culture. It's with an upbringing that's contrary, and it's like we're still, even in our older age, we still have a tendency to loosely associate with the opposite yeah. sex. Not even though we may not be so, like, we're not jumping out of our skins anymore, but we're just,
it's called bad sum scars.
Yes, bad sum scars. We're just habituated to it.
Yeah. This is a bad example.
Yeah. We just have to make best, you know, best use of a bad bargain, as Prabhupada said, you know, make do with the samskaras we've got and make the best of it.
But you sit and think, what's wrong with
it? Yeah. Yeah, okay, so my uncle, you know, gave me my first beer when I was 12, you know, what? It was cool. Initiation ceremonies.
My father gave me a six-pack of beer for my 18th birthday.
Your 8th birthday?
18th.
Oh, 18th, okay.
He
was conservative.
Because that's the legal age at that time with a lesser alcohol content there.
Uh-huh.
By that time, I had enough. I never drank.
Beer was something that always, I thought it was so smelly.
All of it is.
That's so low class.
Every single alcoholic drink tastes terrible. Wine is supposed to be so sophisticated. Yeah. It's like my father drinking wine in a picture, you know, so sophisticated.
And gin is like kerosene or something.
Vodka? Mm. But I've been to India. India was the first country I ever went to where there was no beer. Every other country was, beer was very widespread.
Yeah. Yeah, in England it's like every street corner, beer, beer, beer. Germany, England,
it's a pleasure being
France.
Just because of the absence.
Yeah, I mean, they have a few shops, but basically it's...
Yeah. In America, there's
100,000 people drinking water 6 weeks a year.
Sporting thing.
Yeah. It's an excuse it's an excuse to drink beer and do those other things. We are starting again. Okay, we have these shy ladies on the roof, and now they're going to be talking. That's also a natural characteristic of ladies. They get together and they chat, they gossip, they talk, they, men also for that matter, but it's a natural feminine activity, you know, they get together, they're drawing water at the well or they're doing whatever they're doing, so they get together with other women and they naturally talk. And so here the women were naturally talking about Krishna. Of course, men, women, everybody, he was the center of attention, especially on this occasion. So naturally everyone was talking about Krishna, and the ladies on the roofs began to talk about him. And Prabhupada said that their talking was more appreciated by the Lord than the mantras of the Vedas. And we see in the discussions of these ladies that their discussion seems like high philosophy. He alone existed before the manifested creation of the modes of nature. In him only, because he's the Supreme Lord, all living beings merge as if sleeping at night, their energy suspended. desiring to give names and forms to his parts and parcels, the living entities, he placed them under the guidance of material nature. By his own potency, material nature is empowered to recreate. So these are all highly developed philosophical understandings. And these are, you know, the ladies on the rooftops. So why? Because they're devotees. They're all devotees of the Lord. They're in the holy place, Hastinapur. They're in the kingdom of Maharaj Yudhisthira. So they're all enlightened souls. No, they're not in Dwarka. This is Hastinapur. Krishna's leaving Hastinapur. So the ladies are talking about him as he's about to leave. And because they're devotees, their knowledge is very great. Doesn't matter. Devotional service is transcendental. So it doesn't matter one's a woman, one's a man, one's a child, one's anything. Anyone can come to the highest platform by Krishna consciousness. So these women also were women, but they were great philosophers. And their ordinary talking, or their talking among themselves, was better than the philosophical ideas expressed in the Upanishads. They were beyond that. They said that here is that personality of Godhead whose confidential pastimes are described in the confidential parts of the Vedic literature by great devotees. It's he who creates, maintains, and annihilates the material world. And then in 25, Yada hi adharmina tamo diyo nripa jivanti chatraisha hi satyata kila tate pagam satyam ritam dayam yasho vaya rupani didad yuge yuge. When things get really low, when the kings and administrators become the lowest, sink down to the lowest modes of material nature and live like animals, then this Supreme Personality of Godhead comes and performs wonderful activities to reestablish religious principles. That also, they said, Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. Then they... How glor aho ho shlagyatamam yado kulam aho alam punyatamam matorvanam. How glorious is the dynasty of King Yadu, how virtuous is the land of Mathura. Yadesha pumsam rishabhastriyapati. This place where the husband of the goddess of fortune, the leader of all living entities, has appeared and performed his pastimes. Aho, but it's aho, this is aho. Aho, but svarya shashas tirakshkari kushastali punya yasaskari puva pashanti nityam yadanu graheshitam smithava lokam svapatim sma yat prajaha. This Dwarka has become better than the heavenly planets because the Dwarka city has become better than the heavenly planets because the Dwarkavasis always get to see Krishna in his loving feature. So Prabhupada has a discussion about the heavenly planets and essentially how everything comes and goes there as against the eternal glory of Dwarka, where Krishna always resides. Nunam vratasnana hutadi neshvara samarchito yasya grihitapani pi pibanti ya sakyataramritam muhur rajastriya sammuhur yadashayaha. Now they glorify the gopis of Vrindavan, who would often faint just by thinking about the nectar of the lips of Krishna, which is available to his wives in Dwarka. There are several things to note here. One is that the ladies in Hastinapur were losing the association of Krishna. Krishna is leaving to go to Dwarka. But the Hastinapur ladies weren't envious. They didn't think about the Dwarkavasis and say, ah, you know, those lousy West Coast women. They appreciated that Dwarka is more glorious than the heavenly planets, and the women there are so fortunate, and especially the women who have been accepted by the Lord as his wives. What austerities must they have undergone? What pious activities must they have performed? Similarly, they appreciated the gopis, how exalted they are. And the commentators tell us that the gopis were more advanced because the wives of Krishna, they were getting to kiss Krishna and taste the nectar of his lips, but the gopis were always thinking about it. So in their minds, they were absorbed in thinking about Krishna. We see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He got a little prasadam, and then by thinking about that prasadam, which had been tasted by the lips of Krishna, he went into ecstasy and started thinking about so many things, about the lips of Krishna and how he plays on his flute and how the nectar of his lips is being tasted by the flute, and how the gopis are criticizing the flute, that what kind of, you're just a stick, and how are you getting this nectar? And he's going on and on and on, absorbed in thinking of the lotus lips of Krishna, which had tasted this prasada. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in that mood of the gopis of Vrindavan. And they're always thinking about Krishna, always thinking about, so they're even more advanced than the wives of Krishna in Dwarka. And Prabhupada explains these two relationships, Swakiya and Parakiya, the relationship of being married to Krishna and the relationship of being in a amorous relationship but not being married to Krishna. And of course Prabhupada explains that all of these things were on the transcendental platform. Otherwise devotees like Sukadeva Goswami and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not have been interested. They were not interested in hot topics about men and women. They were interested in transcendental subject matters. So for them to have taken an interest in these topics means that it was all transcendental. Yavirya shulkena hrita svayamvare pramatya chaidya pramukhan hi sushminaha pradumna shambamba sudadayo para yascha hrita bhaumavate sahasrashaha. They're specifically remembering the wives of Krishna. Some of them were gained by Krishna in svayamvara competitions, where the Kshatriya women would be able to choose their own husbands. Choice was an option for the women of the Kshatriya class. They could choose whoever they wanted. So, of course, they could choose unless they got kidnapped. That sometimes happened in these competitions. That so happened that sometimes in these Swayamvara competitions, the girl would choose Krishna, And sometimes Krishna made a shortcut and just kidnapped the girl. Like Rukmini, Krishna kidnapped from her, not Swayambhara, but before she was just at the time of her marriage. And some of these others he gained in the Swayambhara ceremony. So his eight principal queens, their marriage is described in some detail, how Krishna, in two places, well, especially later when the Brajvasis meet the residents of Vrindavan. So the Brajvasi ladies were asking, how is it that you got Krishna as your husband? And the different wives like Kalindi and Agnijitni and Rukmini and Satyabhama, they're describing that this way, this way, this way, this way. Krishna took me, and now I've become a maidservant in Krishna's house. So in this way, they're talking. Then these 16,000 others were a special case. They were kidnapped by Bhomasura. They were kidnapped by Bhomasura, a big demon. And there were, 20,000 kings also who were held captive by this Bhomasura. And one of their representatives somehow was able to get out and come to Dwarka and appeal to Krishna that we're all being bottled up there, you please come and save us. So Krishna did that. Bhima killed the Bhomasura? Yeah, Bhomasura. I'm mixing Jarasandha and Bhomasura. So this is Bhomasura. And then there were also the Jarasandha people. So I'm mixing the two things. The Jarasandha, also Krishna killed. Those were the 20,000 kings. But these Bhomasura pastime, he kidnapped, essentially, these 16,000 princesses and was keeping them for his own enjoyment. And Krishna came to that place. What was the name of that city? Now it's in Assam. I forgot. I've forgotten. But basically, like where Guwahati is, that's where he went and killed this Bhomasura. And then the princesses were free. But they're looking at Krishna shyly, and Krishna can understand they want something. So what do you want? Well, now we're still in difficulty. Now we're free, but no one will accept us as wives. Because we were out of home, and we were in the custody of this demon, so we're rejected. Prabhupada said it was like that, that if a girl was out of home for one night, she'd be unmarriageable. There was some incident, I think in Bombay or someplace, some young girls joined the movement, Indian girls, joined, wanted to come, or did join the temple. Maybe it was in Africa, actually. Africa, Bombay, anyway, from Indian family. And the parents were totally distraught that how will these girls get married? And Prabhupada actually agreed that, yes, you send them back home, let them practice at home. Because the culture is such that girls can't just be out of home and then you marry them. So these girls, they were under the custody of this demon. They were taken by him. So now who'll take them? Just like that, who was it? Amba. She was kidnapped by Bhishmadev to be married to Vichitravirya, but she had her heart set on somebody else. So then she told Bhishma that you kidnapped me, but you didn't know that I'd already given my heart to someone else. So he said, oh, you should have told me. All right, I'll send you back with all honor. So then she went back, and who was it, Shalya? And Shalya said, you know, nothing doing, I'm not taking you. You've been taken by some, kidnapped by somebody else, go there. I'd like me to take you. So that was the, that's just how it was. And of course Bhishma said, I can't take you either. So it was a big problem that didn't get worked out until her next lifetime. Sometimes problems take a while to settle. So in this case, all these 16,000 princesses, we now no one will accept us as wives. So what do you want? We want you as our husband. All right, come on. So Krishna accepted all of these princesses as his wives, and here it said they're all glorious. Then, eta param stri tvam apasta peshalam nirasta shocham patasadu kurvate yasaham grihat pushkara lochana patir najat vipaitya priti bir priti sprisham. Stri tvam, the quality of being women. Or womanhood, probably. Param stri tvam. They achieved the perfection of womanhood. Or their lives as women were perfect. Although, apashta peshalam nirasta shocham. Although they were polluted. Nirasta shocham. They lost their purity. Why? Because they were kidnapped by this demon. And they lived in his establishment, his place, for so long. So they were rejected. But, although they were, you could say, social rejects, although they were unsuitable, although they were spoiled, Krishna accepted all of them. And Padam Stritvam, therefore the Hastinapur ladies say that they are the highest stage of feminine perfection. Because they're Bhata Sadhu, how glorious they are, because they've been accepted by Pushkar Lochana. They've got as their husbands Pushkar Lochana, the personal lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, and the Lord never leaves them. They're eternally associated with the Lord, and He gives them valuable presents, and in every way tries to please them, priti sprishan, in various heart-touching ways. They've got the personality of Godhead for their husband. There's so many honorable ladies who led ideal lives and they got married to the best kings and so on. But these ladies, although they were kidnapped, although they were practically meant to be rejected, they've attained the highest perfection. Who do they have as their husband? They have the personality of Godhead. There's a saying, Chanakya Pandit, he said that, what does he know about different ornaments? The ornament of the sky is the moon. There are other ornaments like that, do you know? Someone know that verse? The ornament of a Brahmin is his knowledge. The ornament of the sky is the moon. The ornament of the earth is the king. And the ornament of a woman is her husband. The ornament of a woman is her husband. So just see who they've got as their husband. There's some, I saw some item that there were some interviews, you know those television shows or gossip magazines, they were interviewing some different, like movie stars. When you see another woman, what do you look at? And one woman said, one actress said that, you know, I look at her makeup. And another woman said, you know, well, I look at her shoes. And another said, well, I look at her jewelry. And then one actress said, I look at her husband. The ornament of a woman is her husband. So the who did these women have as their husband? They had the personality of Godhead. So what kind of perfection they achieved? That's was the conclusion of their prayers or their gossip, really. Their gossip when they're talking about Krishna. And while they're showering flowers on Krishna and talking about him in this way, then the Lord glanced at them, smiling and reciprocating. And then he leaves the city, and Maharaj Yudhisthira, along with the retinue, also accompanies the Lord for some time. But then the Lord persuades the Pandavas to return home, and he proceeds toward Dwarka, going through various tracts of land along the way. And finally, he's welcomed, and he's performing his regular evening duties every night, no matter what's going on. And then he'll reach Dwarka in the next chapter. Are there any questions or comments?
Because they was a princess, they was very high soul, but why so Bhaumasura take them?
Why did Bhaumasura take them?
Yes, because they was devotees of Krishna.
Because they were
devotees of Krishna.
They were devotees of Krishna. You mean how could he have?
Yes.
No, it doesn't specifically mention that. It's not talked about, but that's one thing you can say. It's Krishna's pastime. Like Krishna, how were the Pandavas put in difficulty? How was Draupadi insulted? How were so many things? Yeah, Krishna's pastimes.
Mm-hmm. When you were reading about the ladies on the rooftop, because they're like at a distance from Krishna, does it mean that they're actually at a distance from Krishna?
They have Krishna.
And similarly, sometimes. Like I was younger, so I joined and Prabhupada was, you know, surrounded by all these guys with sticks. I never really got too close to Prabhupada, I never got to have even a conversation with Prabhupada. But that doesn't bar me from having a relationship with Prabhupada. It's not close proximity, it's not... Also, you know, you might be a woman and then you can't get close to your spiritual master, so to speak. It doesn't bar you from spiritually making progress and pleasing your spiritual master, getting recognized, getting the blessings, these things.
By service.
There's no material impediments. So
here we were just reading the other day, the only man who gets mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam among Prabhupada's disciples is Govindadasa. By service.
What is the meaning of all these women of speakers who glorify their
arise despite their being without individuality?
That's a good question. It says that they were without individuality.
1:10:30.
Apostipationum in text 30. It's certainly a strange sort of thing, without individuality. I looked up apostipationum. Apasta means having put aside or having taken away or lost or, you know, it's gone. And pashalam, at least in the dictionary, means charm, beauty, other such congruent words. So at least the dictionary meaning, when I looked it up, was that they'd lost their beauty, they'd lost their charm and so on. I mean, you can imagine, I was hearing the other night about the kings who'd been kidnapped by Jarasandha, and how they all looked, you know, dirty and niggardly, and they had no effulgence, and they were practically starving, and you know, like concentration camp victims, practically. So you can imagine how these women were living, who'd been kidnapped and were stuck like that. So they, I don't know how they looked, but it's not specifically mentioned. But you can assume that they didn't. You can assume that they didn't look their best. I guess you could interpret it that way, that that's what individual without individuality could mean, that they, you know, they all looked equally bad or equally, you know, deflated, practically, you could say.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Nipagona, it's mentioned that they are very beautiful in the description.
Yeah, they are constitutionally beautiful.
What I'm thinking is like in Lord Ramachandra first time,
mm-hmm.
because I sit down with Rabban, and when Ramachandra was passing in a city, and he was hearing the Shudra criticizing the wife, and he still think I'm a Ram, he's staying night. So this can be because they are staying with Ramasura, so they lost their individual purity.
Yeah, according to Dharma, Krishna shouldn't have accepted them. Lord Ram never would have accepted them. He would have said, no, the citizens would talk, it's contrary to my duty, I cannot accept. First of all, he would have said, you know, I'm already married, I've got one wife, and that's it. Ekapatni vrata. But even if I were accepting more, I couldn't accept you. I'm, you know, I'm very sorry, and I'll, you know, I'll make an ashram for you in the forest or something, and I'll see that you're well taken care of, but I can't accept you as my wife because, you know, it's against the Dharma, and I've come to earth to uphold the principles of Dharma. So he wouldn't have done it. But Krishna, come on. Because Krishna is on a higher platform of Dharma. The highest Dharma is Sarva Dharma Pratyaja Mamekam Sharanam. You're surrendering to me? All right, come on. Beyond that. You're surrendering to me? Come on. Ramchandra doesn't reciprocate that. You're surrendering to me with full devotion, following the principles of Dharma. I will reciprocate with you in accordance with my Dharma. But not, I'll transgress Dharma. He never transgressed. Maryada Purushottama, he never transgresses Dharma. And Krishna, yes, I've come to uphold Dharma, but you're surrendering? All right, come on. Krishna shows a fuller manifestation of Godhead. Swarat, independent. Dharma, no Dharma, I'll accept you. Something else? All right. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.